Hi, this is Pat Kennedy, rocking and rolling back on Wednesday here, bringing another hour of Body, Mind, and Spirit. You know what we do. We want to bring you those individuals that are living their lives holistically, and that is both personally and professionally. And we love to bring the experts in to share with you what is new on the plate and get current information, research, controversial items, and thrilled about the hour that we're spending today with our guest who's been on the show before, Pam Colleen. Speaking of controversial, we have Pam Colleen on for the hour, and we love it. She pushes buttons and she's got the facts, and we really get a current look at what's going on in our community, and not only that, globally, for sure. We want you to be informed. We want you to listen. We want you to we want to plant some seeds so that you're going to challenge this information as well and not just take it and run with it, but do your due diligence and really make it your own. What is going to change your life, body, mind, and spirit? So Pam Colleen is a published author, and she's a radio personality, and she's a, I don't know if you call it a watchdog. She's an investigative reporter. She's a woman of many, many talents and expertise, and we're thrilled to have her. And like I said, get some of the up-to-date information for the show today. And there's so many different avenues that we have to explore, body, mind, and spirit, with her. So Pam, thank you for being on the show. I'm excited.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks again, Pat.
I know. It's one of those things. We have so much going on all the time with every part of our lives. And I mean, you're writing books, you're working on another book, you're on the radio. Now, how often are you on radio here?
I'm on CJBK every Thursday morning with Andy Oudman, and CJBK has been bought out by Bell Media, as your listeners probably know. And in St. Catharines, every other Wednesday, I'm on with Tom McConnell. That's 6:10 a.m. So I get on two now Bell Media stations and basically shoot the breeze with Andy and Tom about health issues and even some of the political issues that are associated with health.
Well, and there's many of those that we can talk about. Mm-hmm. That would be more than a full hour, too, to cover them all. But that's wonderful. I love it because it's a way to, without judgment or any kind of fear, to be in a public arena. People love over the airways connecting, getting a relationship, and really finding out what in your heart you're passionate about and what you have to share. So for those listeners that have never really heard of you before, you might find that hard to believe. I might find that hard to believe with you being in London your entire life and all that you've done here. But what could you give us a little bit of the journey? Just fill us in again how you got to be doing what you do today.
Right. Well, what happened to me was it essentially started here at Western. In my early 20s, I got very, very sick. I had been a student here at Western. I went overseas on a working holiday for 2 years, and I came back after collapsing. I got very, very sick. And I didn't pay attention to the red flags that I had with regards to my health when I was in my early 20s. I should have seen the writing on the wall, the symptoms that I was developing in my early 20s, but eventually, reached a sort of hiatus when I collapsed when I was living in Europe. And I got to the point of no return in terms of my health. So I developed a very serious virus, and that was it. I couldn't get out of bed. I was exhausted. I had chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, all sorts of memory problems. I was just deathly, deathly ill. I was like what you would call the walking dead for, over 10 years. I basically lost almost all of my 20s and my 30s due to this illness. And so what I did, though, I was like a pit bull. I was going to get to the root cause of the problem, and I was going to fix this problem because I lost my life, essentially, for, those 2 decades. And so I'm fortunate that I was tenacious. I looked under every stone imaginable. I didn't settle for being told, oh, it was just in my head, or that it was incurable. That's basically the rhetoric I got from the medical establishment. And I learned early on, after I got sick, to not go to medical doctors because they clearly didn't understand the illness and they didn't know what to do about it. So I wasn't at all satisfied with the answers or non-answers I was getting from medical doctors. And I have to say, this is, fast forward 25 years. I'm in my 50s now. So So, and I'm healthy, but it took me a long time to connect the dots. It took me a long time to understand biochemistry, to understand how the thyroid, the adrenal glands work. It took me a lot of trial and error with regards to trying magic potions, trying fad diets, you know, everything imaginable to try and get myself well. And, you know, in that journey, of course, I made a lot of mistakes. And so I do work with a lot of my clients now have everything from, you know, chronic fatigue, brain fog, depression, anxiety, OCD, eating disorders, epilepsy, you know, Tourette's. I work with every imaginable condition. All of these people are falling through the cracks, not just in the medical model, but in the natural health model as well. And I'm really fortunate because I've studied so much and I've come across a system that is really, really powerful in terms of identifying the biochemical imbalances behind these illnesses and what people have to do to undo that damage. The trouble is, of course, when I work with people, I always have to screen my clients very carefully before I take them on because it takes a good 2 years, an average 2 years, to get any results on my program. Just because biochemistry, once it goes out of balance, it's very difficult to bring it back into balance. And that's what I had to learn, and that's what my clients have to learn. But I tell you, I have some very, very determined clients who've been sick for 10, 20, 30, 40 years with these types of conditions, things like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, you know, depression, and so on. And they are determined to get well, and they do get well as long as they follow my program. And there's no, what I've had to learn is that there is no silver bullet, that 99% of the population is looking for something quick to fix their health problems. And so whether it's, you know, a supplement or a pill or whatever the case may be, that they think that they can just take something and that they're going to get better. And that's not how it works. And unfortunately, it takes a lot of surrender to realize, you know, that biochemistry takes time to balance out. It takes time to
Well, there's 72 trillion cells approximately.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah,
and they didn't get toxic overnight.
They didn't
either.
Get toxic overnight. A lot of the kids I work with, I work with a lot of children with autism, with epilepsy and so on. And their mothers, unfortunately, were very, very sick. So their biochemistries were challenged already. And then, unfortunately, the child gets born very sick. So and this is why I'm very concerned about our children today. Because many of them are born sick. They're born with brain fog. They're born with chronic fatigue. I see the symptoms because I had them myself. Identify in others what I experienced myself. And my big concern with younger generations today is that they were born sick. So they have no frame of reference to know what real energy feels like, what libido should feel like, what brain clarity should feel like, what good sleep is all about. You know, people have no frame of reference to know what normal mm-hmm. really is today. And this is my biggest concern about our younger people. Now we have, of course, the teachers here in London admitting that over 25% of young people today in the schools have some sort of mental disorder. And this is unacceptable, Pat. You and I can both remember when we were kids, the kids were pretty, you know, jovial, well-spirited,
you know.
They were, you know, stable. You don't see in children from our generation what is happening to young people today.
Well, we'd go home for a home-cooked meal. I'd go home for lunch for a home-cooked meal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a different cat, even from a nutritional perspective. We had food where now it's these box lunches, and it looks like plastic and cardboard that these children are eating, and they're pale, and they've got bags under their eyes, and how can you be normal with that? And then what is offered at high schools, mm-hmm. Pam? Still the pop and still all the poutine and all the different things.
Well, even juice, you know. I mean, juice is high in sugar.
Sugar.
Yeah, and so we're seeing a lot of instability going on out there. We're seeing a lot of girls with a lot of sexual dysfunction in terms of their periods, their cycles. There's just something very, very wrong.
They're 5 and 6 with breast buds and mm-hmm. starting to grow pubic hair
mm-hmm.
and menstruating at 7 and 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know there's a shift occurring. It's scary. The average person is scared. They have no idea.
Yeah. I work with young men who are in their 20s that have erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
They can't perform sexually. And when they work with me, of course, then I teach them about the importance of animal fat and the diet, and then they start increasing their animal fat and the diet. This ends up helping them tremendously. So, I have a lot of fun. Nobody crosses the line in terms of our discussions about their sexuality. We just have a love. We have to laugh about it. We have to have fun with it because it's a very uncomfortable conversation to have with a young man. But fortunately, over time, they overcome this problem. As long as they understand some of these fundamental laws of nutrition, we need the animal fat, number one, because it contains the cholesterol that is necessary to fuel the hormones in the body. But even secondarily to that, within the animal fat, you have other very precious nutrients, which are called the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin A and vitamin D, E, K. And the important thing is the vitamin A needs to be there very plentifully, because you need the vitamin A in order to convert the hormones. So that's the harmony of having enough animal fat in the diet, that all the nutrients are in there in order to stabilize your blood sugar, in order to fuel your hormones, and in order to fuel your brain. And unfortunately, now we're dealing with a second or third generation of children who are born to mothers who were probably following a low-fat diet. But they
or vegetarian or vegan.
Vegetarian, vegan. They're my sickest clients, no doubt about it. Yeah, they're my sickest clients.
You must get a lot of flack about that.
Oh,
challenge.
Absolutely. But my clients who work with me, the vast majority of them are recovering vegans, vegetarians, and near vegetarians. So they're very grateful to have me help them recover their health. They come to me, Pat, with such severe chronic fatigue, brain fog, anxiety, depression, insomnia, low libido, no libido at all. And these men are not getting erections. These ladies just have no desire. Their cycles are a mess. I mean, there's no way to convince me that vegetarians and vegans are healthy. They're not. I'm a recovering vegan myself. I did it for 9 years. It almost killed me. So I think that my mantra essentially is that vegetarians and vegans do have to learn the hard way. I had to learn the hard way. My clients had to learn the hard way. The tragedy for me, of course, is when women are following vegetarian and vegan diets, that I have to work with their children who were born and ended up being born with things like learning disabilities, speech impediments, epilepsy, and so on. And that's what I see. That's what I have to see every single day. And that, to me, that is one of the biggest tragedies that I see. Because these women believe, as they were vegetarian and being pregnant, they believe
they
that
were the doing diet, the right.
They
thing.
Thought they were doing the right thing, and they have to learn, sadly, that through the consequences of their child getting sick, that it wasn't healthy. You see, to know whether or not a diet is healthy, you have to look at food history. You can't just listen to somebody who says, "Oh, I've been following this fad diet for 20 years, and look at me, I'm healthy." No, that's no way to judge a diet. You have to look multi-generationally. You have to look at a diet in a society that has been in existence for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And then you have to ask yourself these five questions. You have to ask, does this dietary information in terms of the totality of the diet, does it prove to me that couples are fertile, babies are healthy, that there's no chronic disease or mental disorders in society, that the aging are aging gracefully, and are they still productive members of society as senior citizens? You have to ask those five questions in order to be able to take a step back and be very discerning over whether or not the nutritional information you're hearing is correct. Because sadly, most of the nutritional information people are getting today is based on dogma, marketing-based science, mm-hmm. urban myth, and or wishful thinking.
Hidden agenda, huge.
Healthy eating is very simple, Pat. I mean, it's very, very simple. What makes healthy eating complicated is the misinformation people are hearing.
Yeah, and they get caught up in that because, going back to your initial comment, the mindset of today, they want a quick fix, they want a quick pill, Band-Aid, they want to get rid of their symptoms, and they'll totally engulf themselves in one mode of thinking, but it's still powered by that mainstream, do this, and they throw a few things on TV, you go into the supermarket, it's there, your friends are all doing it, and bang.
Right.
Everybody's following suit, right?
Yeah. When I work with people and I, basically lay out the fundamental laws of nutrition, and it's all very basic. I use common sense because that's what it's all about, right? Our ancestors knew how to eat through wisdom, right? They knew through wisdom. And we've lost that wisdom today. Mm-hmm. And so when I try to get people to latch on to the wisdom or the common sense of healthy eating, it's very easy for them to watch the 6 o'clock news that night or read the newspaper the next day and say, "Oh, see, Pam's wrong. This is what this research says,"
yeah.
right? And then they can't go back to those five questions because they're frozen by the misinformation.
Yeah.
So I try to reason with people and say, "Listen, did you ever see the show Little House on the Prairie?
Yeah.
on the Prairie. And did you ever see those scenes when Laura Ingalls would go into the general store And what was in that general store, right? They had fabric, they had guns, they had, you know, odds and ends, right? But did you see a lot of food in that general store? That would have been their quote-unquote grocery store at the time, yeah, right, in the 1800s. And no, you don't see a lot of food in the general store of the 1800s because people, 80% or so of the population, lived on a farm and produced their own food. So they had their own chickens, they had their own farm fresh raw milk, they had their own grass-fed beef, pastured chickens, pastured eggs, right? They were, those are the foods that they were sustaining themselves on. It wasn't a lot of plant-based foods. It couldn't have been, right? Mm-hmm. And so at any rate, when you fast forward, you know, due to the advancements in technologies, if you want to call them advancements, that's a I don't know if I'd call it advancements, but when you look at the food industry, say, post-World War II, that's when you see a sharp degradation in the quality of our food supply.
Now, hold that thought. We're going back into the history of our food patterns, and we want to talk more about that. We're going to take a short break here on 94.9, Body, Mind, and Spirit.
Psst. Psst. Hey, come here. Come here. You want to cure for corporate radio? Try CHRW 94.9 FM.
Okay, we're back. It's Pat Kennedy here with Pam Colleen. We are going through a whole rendition of current information. She's on it. She's local. She's verbal. She's controversial. And we have her here today, and we're getting the scoop. Wow, a recovering vegan. And for the individuals out there that are just starting on a journey to be vegetarian or vegan.
I would absolutely warn against it.
Yeah.
You know, there's really.
Warning.
Yeah. No, if you're.
Skull, you know, and crossbones.
Because I'm going to be speaking with a broad base of ethnic groups here. So, but I'd say probably the majority of the people I'm speaking with are of European descent. And if you're of European descent, 70% of your calories should be coming from animal fat. If you're from different ethnic groups, I would just say, you know, look back into your history, go back and to see what your great, great, great grandparents would have been eating, and that will give you a good baseline as to what your diet should look like. But I'm just speaking generally here that about 70% of our calories should probably be coming from animal fat. And unfortunately, even our government is saying 10%, if not 7% of our calories should be coming from saturated fat, which is the worst dietary advice you could ever put out to a population. In fact, since they've been putting out these food guides, of course, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind. Since the government's been telling us what to eat, we've gotten to our sickest degree ever as a species. So it's obvious to me that we shouldn't be taking the advice of the dietary dictocrats, that we should be taking the advice of our ancestors who knew how to be healthy through wisdom. And I don't think anybody who's figured this out, who's been able to connect the dots, should even bother, you know, lobbying the government to try and fix the food guide. It's a waste of time. The reason why I do the work that I do is I work at a grassroots level to change the system from a grassroots level up, because that's the only way it's going to change. Yeah. Politicians are basically pressured to listen to lobbyists. So they're going to be listening to the grain lobby. You know, they're going to be listening to the lobbyists who have tremendous profits to be made by them pushing their lie, yeah, in the food pyramid or the food guide. So that's where their loyalties lie. They do not lie with the masses. And so one family at a time, one mouth at a time, we've got to change this healthcare crisis that we're in right now, because we are so sick today from listening to this very damaging dietary advice that, of course, this province is on the cusp of going bankrupt. So the only way to change this situation is by taking control of your own health, mm-hmm, and learning the correct nutritional information and doing it and applying it on your own. The vegetarians, unfortunately, are so misguided. I was one of them, so I can absolutely say that. And, you know, if you're adapted to a vegetarian diet multi-generationally and you know how to do it properly and you have access to the pasture-raised sources of things like eggs and dairy, you might be fine. But I don't see that, Pat. That's not what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, in southern India, where they're mostly lacto-ovo-vegetarians, I can't tell you the number of people that I've met who are lacto-ovo-vegetarians, and even from southern India, how much they suffer with things like depression, bipolar.
Now yeah, just explain lacto-ovo, because we have people out, mm-hmm, there that won't know some of this terminology.
These are the vegetarians who would be eating eggs and dairy products.
Okay, there you go.
And so sadly, one day I was teaching a class about this, and somebody from the audience spoke to me afterwards, and she says, I am a counselor, and I counsel people people from southern India into Canada. And she said to me, please keep doing what you're doing, Pam, because I have to work with these people from southern India. And I can tell you, you're absolutely right. These people are so incredibly sick. They suffer with depression, bipolar, fatigue. They're not well. And whether or not it's because they've transitioned to a Canadian style diet where they're getting eggs and dairy products from commercial industrialized sources and the quality is inferior, or whether they're just getting inferior quality products in southern India, whatever the case may be, it's not enough to sustain their, especially mental health. And I can tell you too that if you look at the history of vegetarianism, it was invented as a knee-jerk reaction to an overpopulation problem. It was never invented for health reasons. Secondarily, with the vegan diet, it was intentionally invented to basically kill people's libido.
When were these invented?
The vegan diet was invented by Sylvester Graham in the early 1800s, and he was a puritanical. He was very anti-sex, and he just didn't believe in people, even married couples, having sex. That's how anti-sex he was. And so he invented the vegan diet in order to curb lust. That was the intention of it. And then Kellogg followed suit. And of course, each of these gentlemen had vested interests essentially in selling grain products. So to demonize animal products in order to sell grain products was a great marketing tool, of course. But it certainly wasn't good for anyone's libido.
Now, on a local level, you're here, you're constantly doing seminars and educating, and you're here actually working with clients. How receptive is Canada? How receptive is the U.S.? Are there some big players speaking the truth as you're speaking today? Are they getting the message out?
Well, more and more people are catching on to the importance of animal fats. So now we have Gary Taubes, of course, who's written various articles for the New York Times. He's written a couple of books. The Good Calories, Bad Calories, and another one called Why We Get Fat. Now, Gary Taubes has paired up with Dr. Peter Attia, who I believe is a Canadian medical doctor living in the States right now. And they have been funded by a multi-billionaire hedge fund manager to basically do research on what it is that our ancestors mm-hmm. already knew through wisdom, but they're researching the benefits of animal fat. And I would say that's huge in terms of our efforts to get people over their fat and cholesterol phobia. Unfortunately, we have to do research to do that. But like I said, the evidence is very clear in terms mm-hmm. of our dietary history. So to me, that's encouraging, at least that there's some research being done in this, because most universities, most of academia today is still demonizing animal fat, is still putting plant-based foods on a pedestal when they shouldn't be. Clearly, over the last 50 or so years, as we have been reducing our consumption of animal fat, increasing our consumption of plant-based foods, we see how sick we are as a society. Before World War II, even up until that point, we were still getting about 70% of our calories from animal fat, and we were much, much healthier before World War II than we are today. So we have to be able to connect the dots, and we have to return to common sense if we're going to turn our healthcare crisis around.
And looking at animal fat, one of the controversial things are fat sources that are contaminated with various antibiotics, hormones, the meat, the butter, the things that are going on with the source of the animals. So what do you have to say about that? Where are we at on that?
Well, a couple of connection. Things. First thing is I know before World War II, we were known as the land of three squares. So we very happily ate, and I'm speaking very broad-based here. You know, I'm just saying before World War II, we were happy to sit down and have a bacon and egg style breakfast, a meat and potato style lunch and dinner. And of course, the potato would have been, you know, lathered in butter.
Absolutely.
And high-fat sour cream, right? So, you know, What people need to use as a baseline is this idea of eating three square meals a day, because we know when we ate three square meals a day, we were healthy. And so you start with that model, and then from there you go for a gold standard if you can. So in other words, if those foods come from a local farmer, they're maybe organically grown, the animals are outside on pasture, that's your gold standard. But if you can't get the gold standard, I don't want people to be stressed. If you can only buy your food at a grocery store, so be it. So if you are shopping in a grocery store, just stick to the outer periphery of the grocery store. And please don't stress too much about how that food might have been produced. You intellectually probably know it's better to buy your food from a farmer. It's better to make sure that you go and inspect the farm, make sure the animals are truly outside. But the problem with, you know, scaring people even from factory farmed industrialized foods like that is that they may be so afraid to eat factory farm foods that they will not eat their three squares. So they'll be scratching their heads going, well, now what do I eat? Soy and salad, which is the worst, you know what I mean? Like that's mm-hmm. like, that's not going to sustain.
Soy is an issue.
Soy is so bad. But at any rate, so I've seen this happen up close and personal. I had one of my students, you know, was being surrounded by people who told her, don't feed your kids factory farm foods. And this woman was a single mom and on a very limited budget. And so she resorted to feeding her kid this sort of soy and salad model. And unfortunately, the children ended up with all sorts of behavior and learning problems. So she came to my classes and literally broke down in tears crying. And she realized what she had to do in order to feed her kids. I just take that albatross right off the shoulder. Because
I love what you're saying, because there's good, better, best. Let's get real about that. We mm-hmm. know that. And the thing is, it's yes, if you can do the gold standard, as you say. Mm-hmm. But if not, you can't get stressed trying to get healthy. It does not work. You take 20 steps back every day. Mm-hmm. Just the thought mm-hmm. of being stressed about making what you consider to be a poor choice, mm-hmm. That's not a good thing.
And I work with too many people who have eating disorders of all kinds, right? And so I have to basically bring everything down to this, you know, bare bottoms here. Like, it's so simple to eat healthy. Please don't become neurotic about your food. You have to understand, I work with people who either have things like anorexia, full-blown anorexia, or I have people who are food elitists, and I have to calm them down as well, because it's not realistic to if you want to go to your favorite restaurant in London and socialize with your friends, you're going to look like, you know, Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally, you know, that movie was like, it's just, you're not going to fit in, you know?
No.
So you always have to, when you're going out, when you're socializing, when you're at home, always live by the mantra, you're going to do the best you can with what you have.
Yeah.
And that gives you some peace of mind. It gives you a sense of normalcy.
Which you need.
And then in terms of your level of activism, if you're an activist around this, you can still be an activist. You're going to, at home, make the best choices you can. You're going to, on your own, go out and network with local farmers. You're going to be able to change the supply and demand accordingly and gradually. Because we know, Pat, I mean, my first book was The Great Bird Flu Hoax. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it's about the problems with factory farm foods. Obviously, I'm against factory farm foods, but we have to be realistic here. We're not going to get rid of factory farms overnight.
Overnight, no. You know, it is a process. Mm-hmm. And being on the grassroots level is the way to do it. One mm-hmm. person at a time, one group at a time. Amazing. Give us your information of your website, Pam, so that we can have our listeners check that out.
My website is www.pamkilleen.com, and Killeen is spelled KILLLEN.com. And I do teach year-round at the Central Library. And if people just go to my upcoming events page, they'll be able to access the dates and times of some of my classes. I'm teaching a couple of classes in October, for example. One on digestive wellness and another one on sexual healing.
What are those dates?
You know what? It's the first.
It's on that page.
It's the first couple of Tuesdays in October and the last two Wednesdays of October. So the first class is on, you know, what you can do to help your digestive system, because digestive distress is such a common problem today, and largely because of the fact that we're not eating enough animal fat in the diet. And then the second class is about, you know, why we're seeing so much erectile dysfunction, low libido, infertility, birth defects in children, and so on. Why is this happening today? It's not really rocket science as to why all of these things are going on. But what I'm doing in this class is I'm consolidating the information so people can connect the dots on their own. And then that actual PowerPoint presentation that I'll be teaching is part and parcel to my upcoming book on the same subject.
Yes, and we want to get more into Pam's upcoming book. We're going to take a short break here on Body, Mind, and Spirit. This is Pat Kennedy with Pam Killeen, and we will be right back. Stay tuned.
Hi, we're the Thames Fatales, London's best roller derby girls. You're listening to 94.9 CHRW.
Looking to add some excitement for your life? Tune in every Wednesday, 3:30 to 6 p.m. to Shaking Cats Radio right here at 94.9 CHRW for all the best in rockabilly, psychabilly, surf, and cowpunk. That's Shaking Cats Radio right here on CHRW.
Shaking Cats Radio. Alrighty, we're back. Pam, half hour. We want to make sure we're getting everything we can packed into this hour, that's for sure. And I love, we've covered a lot to date. Pam Colleen, published author. Let's talk about your second book, After the Bird Flu Hoax, which we need to mention. It's really, you know, confirming what we're discussing today, and also the hopes of the next one, hot topic. We'll get into that. So talk about your second book.
The second book I wrote is called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, and it's about common sense solutions for this number one health problem that we have out there today, which is addiction and mood disorders. They basically go hand in hand. And so what I do in the book is I help people connect the dots in terms of understanding the very intimate relationship between food and mood. And unfortunately, with addiction today, you know, these addiction treatment centers are not acknowledging, they're not embracing the role that nutrition plays on addiction. And that's why in these addiction recovery centers, they have about a 90% failure rate, because they're not dealing with the underlying reasons behind addiction. And, you know, make no mistake that this addiction epidemic that we have today is bankrupting us. This is our number one health problem. There are more deaths and disabilities from addiction, from substance abuse in particular, than from the chronic diseases that we're seeing today. But this isn't talked about because addiction is the elephant in the room. And so essentially, I interview in the book people who are dealing with nutrition and addiction. That's one of the things that I do in my clinical practice in terms of helping people with mood disorders and addiction, is working with